and welcome to episode 251 of Lapsed Gamer Radio. I am your host, Mark, as usual. And joining me tonight for another intimate episode is Mr. Mark Chazzy Ray. How you doing, fella?
I'm doing very well.
You're doing well?
That's my intimate
good
voice.
Hello. Oh, okay. That's your seductive voice.
My seductive tones. Oh, yeah. God. No, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Please tell me that's not the voice you use on your wife.
No, God, no. Okay. I think she'd hit me.
Yeah. So what's going down in Chazzy World then?
Chazzy World? Not much, actually. It's been quiet. I've been working hard, head down. I had to go into London for once. So that was an experience. I haven't been there for a while.
Yeah?
For work, yeah. So yeah, I'm not used to the old commute and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. But yeah, other than that, it's been quiet in Chazzy World. I've just been... It's been sunshine or rain or horrific winds.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Or sometimes like all three.
Yeah. In the same day. In the same hour.
The same day. Yeah. So we had like Sunday gone. It was like 17, 18 degrees. It was real sunny, real warm, lovely day. And the next morning, I got woken up by like a horrendous thunderstorm. Which set the dogs off, something rotten. And then we had a hailstorm, and then it brightened up again. I was like, okay, things are looking good. So I got home from work, and we went to take the dogs out for a walk. We got down to the park at the end of our street, and then when we left it to the front door, it was sunny. We got to the park at the end of the street, which is like a three-minute walk.
Yeah.
And we got hit by another hailstorm.
Oh, lovely.
It was... Not the weather's just all over the place at the moment. It's not great.
It's bonkers. It's not ideal. Absolutely bonkers.
But you know, it was British springtime. What do you expect?
That's it. I mean, we went to was it like last Saturday or whatever it was? We went. It was like blindingly sunny. Went to the beach. Went to the arcades, and then the next day we were indoors, like putting the heating on, freezing.
Yeah.
Just bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah, I cracked the shorts out, and now I've had to put them away again already.
the shorts of hope.
Yeah, I know.
Blimey.
Very optimistic, getting a little bit early, getting the shorts out in April. But,
yeah, man.
Yeah. Should we talk about some video games?
Yes, mate. Let's talk about the games.
Bit of news, first of all, just having a little skirt through the news. Larian Studios, they talked about recently at... Is it GDC?
GDC, yeah.
Sven Vinker was talking about how they're kind of done with D&D. There won't be... I mean, they're still doing updates for Baldur's Gate 3, but there won't be any DLC. There won't be... They will not be making a Baldur's Gate 4. They're moving on to something new. And then just reading from this article here on Kotaku, in a developer update on Steam, Larian details some of its new content coming to Baldur's Gate 3 7th patch, including an expanded conclusion for the evil route. Which also diverged a few details about what else it's working on. As the studio's already said, it's not working on a big expansion or DLC for the game, nor is it working on a fourth game set in the Wizards of the Coast universe. Instead, the team is looking to work on its own IP and has two games in the works. These projects are still in the early days, but Larian says the development sensibilities that made Baldur's Gate 3 such a hit are still in place. So they're working on two games. You could presume maybe that one of them would be a follow-up to Divinity Original Sin 2, which is a great game, sold very well. I'm guessing that the other one is going to be some new IP.
Yeah, wonder what that
another original IP. I can't think they're going to do something licensed, right?
I can't imagine so.
No.
It feels like Hasbro is now kind of the owner of D&D, right? And Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah, and they're...
And that was a bit...
Dire financial state.
And it just sounded like working with Hasbro to get that Baldur's Gate out was a bit tense, shall we say.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
But yeah, no, it'd be interesting to see if they, you know, they go in a different direction, like they get away from the kind of isometric RPG.
Yeah.
You know. Do you reckon they would, or is that...
I don't know why they would. I mean, why would you? It's like
when it's working
really
so well.
Good at.
Yeah,
yeah. I know this is what they're really good at. I don't know why. I don't. I can't see them getting away from it. But who knows? Who knows? I don't know. What else have we got here? Not a huge amount, to be honest, really. The director of Deus Ex says that he thinks the future of immersive sims is in multiplayer, which is
okay.
Depressing.
Yeah.
Warren Spector. I'm trying to find a quote here. Warren Spector is working on making some game called Thick as Thieves.
Okay.
Apparently, a large part of the loop of the Thick of Thieves session will include gathering intel from around the city, which can be gained by bribing guards, for example. This just sounds like a thief game.
Like Thief, but with more systems.
Yeah, this kind of interactivity with another in a live and reactive environment is the next logical step for the genre, he says. Part of the simulation is human interactions in the world. It's really a simulation that we drop a set of thieves into. As part of its live service offering, Thick of Thieves will likely release new neighborhoods of the city over time, as well as new. But unfortunately, this is the only way that I guess games like this can get funded. It's like
the promise of eternal money.
Idea. Yeah, exactly. It's like you take the idea to the same sort of thing is happening in films at the moment as well. It's kind of depressing, and that directors will have like interesting. Ideas for storytelling, but the only way they can get it off the ground is by attaching it to some existing IP. So the new thing at the moment is like in the wake of Barbie, all of these toy and game IP owners are being like, well, why don't we make a film set around this? And like, and then interesting directors are going to have to try and squeeze their interesting story into that framework.
This is
and
it.
So game developers who I mean, Warren Spector is a veteran with a long record of making incredible games. And the fact that...
Even he's got to kind of justify it.
I can't help but think him saying that the future of immersive sims as a live service game was said at gunpoint, something like that. Like
Warren Spector tied to a chair said. Mm-hmm. But yeah, nice. There's a lot of this at the moment. It was I've been seeing the comments from the ex Blizzard. Is it Mike Ybarra or someone?
Mike Ybarra.
Yeah, and he's been like sort of talking about. No, I mean, like, sometimes I play a single player $70 game and I just want to give them more money and I want to be able to tip them and stuff. And it's like, mate, I don't want to be giving people more money for nothing, you know, like $70 is, or pounds or whatever it is, it's way more than enough for me to pay for a game. And then for you to like sort of try and drag even more out of me, it's just, yeah, it's criminal.
Yep.
I get it, they cost a lot to make, but like sort of scale back your ambition.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's, I mean, if that is the future, it's kind of depressing. Mm. I like my immersive sims to be single player and played offline.
This is it. I mean, isn't the joy of it
reliant.
That, like you find your way, like you'll play it and replay it to find new ways to do stuff in that environment, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're doing that with, I can see how doing that with friends would be really interesting, but like trying to, it's always the way with these games. You end up trying to grab people and get them together, and oh, I can't play it because I haven't got two other mates with me, and now I've got a gypped experience because I can't, you know, I can't do what I want to do, and no one's around, and Dave's got to look after his kids tonight, and you know, it all falls apart.
Yeah,
you know? It's too much.
I miss this one. This is from a while ago, but speaking of immersive sims, actor Elias Toufexis, who's the, well, I think that's how I'm pronouncing it, the voice actor of Adam Jensen in Deus Ex. This is in an interview he gave with PC Games N. He it seemed to indicate that his relationship with Eidos Montreal isn't all that great. After he said that, after 2016, his studio didn't reach out to him anymore, adding that everything he's heard from Deus about Deus Ex and the studio's future projects came from friends speaking off the record. And then he said, even when Eidos Montreal went off and did Guardians of the Galaxy and shelved any Deus Ex sequel, I had to hear about it secondhand. They didn't even throw an audition my way. They don't tell me shit. Everything I've heard from is from friends off the record. Mm. It ain't much. And then he said, he remembers the last time the studio contacted him directly. He said, I remember I heard from Eidos in 2020 when they called me to ask me to stop talking about Adam Jensen in interviews and podcasts because they wanted people to focus on other things from the studio, which really shows how popular Jensen is or was anyway. Mm. I mean, the appetite is clearly there for more Deus Ex. I don't know how well it sold.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I guess it's just like who owns Eidos Montreal now?
Oh, didn't it get bought out recently?
I think it did, right?
Like, part of me wants to say it was embraced at some point.
Oh, no.
That's but then it was unembraced or something like that. Or it was like part of it was sold off and part of it was kept. I can't remember.
CDE Entertainment bought it in 2022.
Yeah, it was recently.
Which is Embracer. Yes, it got embraced. Yeah. I thought it was getting sold off again.
This is it. That was the thing. I was under the impression kind of Eidos. It was sort of kind of Eidos was split off from the other parts of that group because Eidos and is it Core? But yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. And Crystal Dynamics,
In November 2022, Jason Schreier reported that Eidos Montreal was in a very early development stages of a new Deus Ex game. Then in January 2024, he reported that Embracer Group had cancelled the game, which had been in development for 2 years, and laid off 97 people.
Yeah.
In a studio, so I don't know. But Do you remember when everyone was optimistic about Embracer Group buying studios?
It was the best thing since sliced bread. It was all this money sloshing about and everyone was like jumping on the bandwagon.
Any other bit of news that's worth really talking about before we start talking about what we've been playing is, do you want to hazard a guess what you think is the best-selling game in Europe at the moment?
Best-selling game in Europe? Fortnite.
No.
League of Legends.
They're both free-to-play games.
Oh, yeah. No,
best-selling.
I was going to say they don't count as sales, do they? No. Football Manager.
I wish. I fucking wish it was Football Manager.
I'm just trying to think of the like stealth games that kind of they're just doing numbers constantly.
I watched... did you watch BAFTA at all?
No, I didn't. I want to.
It was so crazy seeing like... It was on like how much category it was. It was like the... best supported game or
live
service.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just live service because it included like Cyberpunk and No Man's Sky, like games that are really well supported.
Yeah.
And popped Football Manager in there and I was like, holy fuck, of course. I think it popped up in like best British game as well. And I was like, of course, Sports Interactive UK studio because like FIFA gets made in Canada, right?
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The best-selling game in Europe right now is Fallout 4.
Oh, really? Yeah, but I mean, it has just been dropped on PC to like £4 or something stupid.
And big resurgence. Right? Yeah. I did pick up off the back of... because there was a big sale on Steam for like... FPS games or whatever, and I picked up the game of the year of despite the fact that it is available on Game Pass, I picked up the game of the year edition of Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've looked at that.
So I can run it on the Steam Deck.
Yeah, man.
And it runs real good on the Steam Deck. And really? It runs at like a native 16:10 aspect ratio, so you can actually use the whole of the screen.
Oh, awesome.
It's not verified. Like you have to go through the splash screen at the beginning, where you can enter like the graphical options and whatnot, and then actually click to start the game. And that has no like support for the thumbsticks or anything. So you actually have to like press tap on the the play button on the screen to go through it.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you have to bring up the Steam keyboard to enter your character's name or whatnot. But apart from that, absolutely no problems at all.
No, lovely. Nice.
But how much is Fallout 4?
I think it's $3.99 at the moment on Steam.
$3.99.
Yeah, because I looked at it about a couple of hours ago.
Still not interested.
But this is the thing, is they're bringing out all this... So what is it that they're doing to the game that's, that they've said like they're enhancing it in April sometime?
Yeah, it's just the next-gen update.
Yeah, so yeah, they're just getting like, it's not for packs and...
Yeah, but that's for people who've got like PS5 and Xbox Series X and S.
No, there's definitely... I swear there's a PC update
but it
as well.
All, I don't know if it needs it on PC, right? It already looked good on PC. Well, as good as Fallout can look on PC. It was... No,
yeah,
you could already. It's like when they brought out the next gen update for The Witcher 3, and like the it didn't really make much of a difference on PC. Oh, they added in like ray tracing support, stuff like that. Maybe they'll put that in and it'll fucking break the game.
Yeah, it says here a free Fallout update for PC players as well as the console players. For PC, where the game will get support for big screen and ultra wide screen, as well as improvements to the creation kit and various mission updates. So it's just like ease of use and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, tidy up the bugs.
I mean, I don't know what the situation is with the game now. I never completed it. I got too frustrated. I bought it on PS4 and I got so frustrated with it.
Is that the one with the Underground Railroad?
Yes, there is an Underground Railroad in there. Yeah. I had the problem with, like, I got all the way to the end of one of the faction quests, and then it bugged out and I couldn't complete it. And I was like, John, I'm fucking done with this nonsense. Like, if you cannot get one of the faction quests to work right, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
In the bin, then play it again. I would be interested in playing it again at some point, but probably only in VR.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got that in VR.
Yeah, because I watched the... Up Is Not Jump playing on VR, and I don't know. It looks kind of fun in a janky way.
Oh, it's really janky.
The jank could be more fun in VR than it is playing it 2D.
Yeah.
But New Vegas is still an absolute banger.
Mm.
So,
what's Obsidian's new thing that they've got coming down the line? Is that
their version of their spin Skyrim. On Skyrim?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called. I think it might be Spellbound or something.
I'm just going to have a look now. A new game.
That's coming out later this year.
Avowed.
Avowed. Not Spellbound, fuck.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Avowed.
I knew it was like some kind of, you know, fantasy word. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. Should we talk about what we've been playing then, Chesney?
Yes, mate. Yeah.
What have you been playing?
I've fallen into a very big Balatro hole. Like, I've not spoken... Well, yeah, I mean, it's been that big that, like, since the last time we spoke, I've played nothing else, and that's been nearly, what, 3 weeks?
I've got absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, mate, honestly, I've done, what, 28 hours so far, looking at my Steam Deck just now. And that is just going to climb and climb and climb, and that's unheard of for me. So,
can you see this?
Yeah, I'm just logging onto it now. Love it.
Hang on.
Just looking at your screen with all your different.
How do I get to my stats?
Your stats, yeah, for Balatro, mate. Love it. That's 38. I've never got anything.
Million.
38 million points is the best hand. Like, I've got nowhere near that. I've played it for 28 hours. And I've had 2 wins.
That's my best legitimate hand. I've gotten higher hands when I played seeded runs.
Yeah.
Where people have had like a ridiculous run and they've posted their seed on Reddit. And I was like, I'll just try it out just for fun. Like, it doesn't count. You don't get any of the unlocks or anything like that. It doesn't count towards your stats because it's technically cheating. But
I love it.
The dangerous
combination of a Steam Deck and Balatro, just because I can sit there and I can be in bed and like sort of sit there at 9:30 while my wife, like, she goes to bed early, and I'll just sit there and I'll look up and it's 1 a.m. and I've done like 4 runs.
Yeah.
And it's, so I've got this weird thing of like, I don't like games with like playing cards. Just I find it a bit weird and freaky. No, I just can't.
Funnily enough, neither does the guy who made the game.
Right. So
local thunk. He doesn't like, I think it's, what it was said is like, he doesn't like roguelikes and he doesn't like poker.
Yeah.
So he made a poker roguelike.
Standard. But, you know, it's just that thing of like, I've never liked games with like, that, even like playing poker, it's just not my thing. I think it's just, I was scarred as a child or whatever. And, you know, like my parents would always have card evenings and we'd be sent upstairs, right? So I've always been a bit like, oh, no, I don't want anything to do with that. So Balatro, everyone's talking about it on podcasts. And I thought, oh, no, it sounds really cool, but just not my thing, not interesting. And I kept hearing from people like, oh, I don't like cards, but I'm really into this. This is, like, amazing. I thought, right, I think it was like £6.50. I thought, yeah, I'll pick that up. It's worth just picking it up just to kind of, you know, play it for 20 minutes at least and kind of get an idea for it. And then, like I say, like 4 hours later, I was absolutely hooked. That game does an amazing thing of just building tension. Everything about it, just, it's always constantly, you're constantly on the edge of failing to get the amount of points you need. And I love it. And I'll watch streams of it because watching people like trying to make their thought processes. Because every single hand, you know, you've got to, you're throwing the dice, you're kind of, you know, you're making a decision, not necessarily for now, but like for like a couple of hands down the line, or, yeah, like what joker should I pick up? What should I pick up more tarot cards? You know, all this kind of stuff. Like the whole thing is just so brilliantly built, and it's just all the systems that interweave on it to make. Yeah, just give you that kind of endorphin rush. Yeah, it's just absolutely quality. Can't recommend it enough.
My best run I had on it was I got slight spoilers for some jokers you may not have got yet, but I got a joker that it's called the Blueprint Joker.
Yes.
Which copies the Joker to its right.
Right. Yeah.
And I got got that one, and pretty much straight afterwards I got the DNA Joker.
Okay.
Which, if you play a single card as your first hand, it makes a copy of it. So I stuck the Blueprint in front of that, and then I was just playing like a single ace at the beginning of every hand and getting two copies of that ace.
So you're just getting more and more and more aces in your hand.
More and more and more aces. And then, like, when I had the opportunity through tarot cards to, like, destroy some cards, like the Hangman card, I was just deleting other cards that I didn't need.
Mm.
But I was reaching a point where I was just getting, I just had so many aces that it didn't matter that I had, like, a full, like, 40-something of the other cards, because every hand I pulled was just pretty much all aces.
Yeah.
But then I also pulled one of the rare jokers that was like plus 0.25 times multiplier for every card added to your deck.
Yeah.
So then I was like, using DNA, I was getting two cards added to my deck, which is like another point. So basically 0.5 of a multiplier every time at the beginning of every hand added to that multiplier. And the way it works is like you have like a number of chips times your multiplier, but the multiplier itself is affected by the jokers in either multiplicative or additive or multiplicative. So you have like jokers that are +4, +5, whatever,
+12, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you'll also get ones that are like times, and you want to put the times ones at the end. I can't remember did I save it? Where does NVIDIA save videos?
That'll be in your, I think that goes straight into your videos folder. And then
have a look here.
NVIDIA.
Was I just playing pairs? Oh, no, that was it. I was playing pairs and Kings.
Hmm.
And I had the blueprint, the DNA, the trousers, which yes. every time you play two player, it gets like adds on to the multiplier. And then I had the Joker that like if you play a hand, if you play the same hand more than once, you get times three multiplier on that.
Oh, lovely.
So then I was moving the blueprint around, so I'd get like the DNA, and then I'd switch the blueprint up to the other end. So I was getting like using the blueprint on the DNA to make copies of aces and kings, and getting two copies each time, and then switching the blueprint up to the other end in front of the one that was getting a multiplier for every card that was added to the deck, at which point I'd added so many cards that multiplier was huge. So then I was getting like a bump off the trousers, and then times three when I played my second hand, then times the multiplier from the adding the deck, but then times that again because I was using the blueprint, and it just it kind of like just, if you just get that right
combination, mix, and you get a bit of luck with the like so you play through a small blind, a big blind, and then you play the
a boss
blind.
So
it's if you can get a nice little run going, but also get the right bosses at the right time that sort of work into that, then you're off to the races.
Yeah, but also but like knowing your Big synergy one. Of what you're doing, and like when I was like playing through this game that was like a seeded run that someone else had played before, and they left some like basic instructions on how to get the tech running. So when the cards would unlock, which cards to pick up on this particular run. And I was just doing it just for the fun of it, just to see how high the number could get. And it was all based around one of the jokers that would make a copy of, if you have like the consumable cards up in the right, like a planet card or a
tarot card or whatever.
It would make a negative copy of that, which means that it like doesn't take up a slot. So you can have as many as you want.
Yeah, I saw this the other day on some guy, and he had like 30... Yeah, he had like 30-odd cards up there or something. It was mad.
Yeah. So we were doing that for a bit, and then one of the tokens you can unlock means that if you have a planetary card for the hand that you're playing in your consumable slot, it adds a times two multiplier to the multiplier, right?
Right, yeah.
So then this Joker coupled with the Brainstorm Joker, which copies that one, and then just playing high cards, just playing one single queen, just one single queen every time, and then picking up the Pluto card.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then once that's your highest used hand, you can use the telescope to focus so that every time you open up a card pack, Pluto will be the card that you will be one of the cards.
So you always get the card that you most play. Yeah.
Yeah, but then you were getting like copies and copies and copies and copies and copies of the Pluto. It was like he called it like the plutonium run, the plutonium powered run. And there were some other jokers in there. Like the tech was really, really fun.
Yeah.
And like people have gotten so deep into that game. I've seen people who have like a few weeks ago, I was looking at and the highest runs people had done. It's like one guy had managed to get in one.
Now, when you're getting into like more to the power of, you know, XXX, and it's like, Jesus.
Yeah. One guy got a score that was higher than what is supposed to be the maximum number of atoms in the universe. It was like 30 something with like 80 zeros after it.
Yeah, it was insane.
But now since then, I've seen people who have like who've managed to break the game to the point where it was just like infinity.
Wow,
just
that's ridiculous.
There is no number.
Yeah, I'd love to get to that stage like, just to the kind of like have a mastery of. Because there's like what four, five different little systems or little economies going on that you've kind of got to like you know spin your plates and keep going, and that's the bit I love about it is that you sit there and you have to puzzle solve all these little and try and work out what is the most efficient way of using getting those all those systems to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you say, and like when people have got that and then are getting into these, like you say, infinity scores and stuff, that must just be incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like my winning run was, I had all black cards can be used together to make flushes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Red cards can be used together to make flushes.
You got that Joker?
Yeah, so I got that yeah. Joker.
Yeah. Later on, you'll unlock a deck that is just that. It's just hearts and spades.
Hearts and spades, right?
Yeah, two lots of hearts, two lots of spades.
Nice. So then I'd leveled up flush to like level 8 through doing the planetary cards. But then I got the Joker that was every time you use a tarot card, the multiplier goes up. So right. I was just constantly buying and using tarot cards.
Yeah, to get like I used a plus, that one.
Like 50, 60 multiplier.
Yeah.
Plus I was constantly using celestial cards to try and bolster that side of the things. So basically with a flush, with a multiplier, and it was just going through the roof. And then I got the Vagabond, which then gives you a tarot card every time you play a hand. So I was just constantly recycling tarot cards, which was then constantly bumping up the multiplier. Then I got Ramen that was giving me a 2x multiplier. And then I had steel cards in the deck that I was leaving in the deck, which then give you a 1.5 multiplier. So if I had like three steel cards still in my hand, plus everything else that was going off, that multiplier just went ding, 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 ding. It just went off the charts. Yeah, and that was it. And I just rinsed straight through it on that run. But yeah, it was incredible. And when you get that like satisfying little, well, that feeds into this and this feeds into that and this feeds into that, and if I can just keep rotating, you know, and getting it, leveling this certain thing up, or these certain two strategy card hands, level that card hand, and like two pair and a flush, and I can alternate if there's a problem, because like you're always watching for the boss blinds. Like, I'm always thinking, because I had one where it was all cards are face cards, like early on. I thought, oh, this is brilliant, because if every card is considered a face card, I've got this other thing that basically every time you play a face card, you get a multiplier. Brilliant, love it. And then the boss blind, like literally disables all face cards, and they were all blanked out. So that was it, I was done.
Yeah.
Like the run was over.
So you can like look at the one you've got coming up ahead, and sometimes you can buy a voucher that re-rolls means you can re-roll the boss blind. Yeah. Sometimes there is a Joker as well that you can pick up that if you sell it, it re-rolls the boss blind.
Yeah.
There's
another one that's like if you fail the run, it carries the run going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some like... this game was made by one person.
Mm.
And so there are some issues that pop up every now and then, and the community quick to point them out. And to be fair, he's doing a good job of fixing them.
Oh, yeah.
But occasionally those boss blinds can just absolutely end a run when in the way that you have no way to fix it. So, for instance, like I've been playing through some of the challenge runs, which are quite fun. Like... you play a deck that has no face cards.
Yeah.
Or what's the one I was playing through? The Mad World. Yeah, it's got no face cards or tens or aces. It's a 32 card deck, just the numbers. 1 to 9.
Blimey.
2 to 9 even, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have an eternal negative copy of the Joker that means that when every card is considered a face card.
Yeah.
And a copy of the business card Joker, which means that played face cards have a 1 in 2 chance to give you $2 when they score.
Right.
Because you get no money from player from extra hands and no money from interest. That's just an example of one of the ones you can run. There's another one called the Omelette Challenge where you get 5 copies of the Egg Joker, which gains money at the end of each hand, and then you sell it off for profit. And the downside is that you get no reward money for any hands, for any of the blinds in that.
Blinds,
Yeah, but it's one of the challenges, which is like playing with no jokers.
Okay.
Playing an entire run with no jokers. And someone posted on Reddit that they played it when it's like you have no joker slots, you can't buy any jokers. And they got to the boss blind, which is like all cards are debuffed until you sell a joker. But
yeah,
you can't sell a joker because you haven't got any.
Nightmare. Yeah. Well, right.
And there's a few little problems like that. There's like when you're playing, once you've completed a run, you can like increase, put an extra chip on it when you start to increase the difficulty, and there's a new modifier. And doing that like unlocks other decks later on that do interesting things.
Yeah.
And I was doing a run the other day which had like eternal jokers in there, which means if you buy it or you get it from a tarot card or whatever, it's an eternal joker, it can't be sold.
Right.
And I was seeing copies of the egg joker, which is the one that the only thing it does is it accrues money and then you sell it.
Yeah. So but like, it was if you get it early doors, it can really dig you out of a hole later on.
Yes. Yeah. But it just sits there taking up a joker slot, not doing anything until you sell it. Yeah. But you could buy eternal copies of it in the shop. And it's like, well, why is that a thing? That shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
So there's a few little like wrinkles that need ironing out, but you know, it's made by one guy.
I know, it's incredible. So
it's incredible. Fucking nuts. It's sold it's north of a million copies sold now.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Which is insane.
Yeah. No, I love that.
But yeah, it's so good. It feels so well balanced. It's a real challenge. It is horribly addictive.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
I've played, how much have I played of it? This is gonna be embarrassing.
Like I say, I mean, for me, like, you know that it's got to be a good game, like, because obviously I don't put a lot of hours into a lot of games, but because it's, I can fit it into small, you know, like if I'm just waiting for something to, you know, or like waiting at a bus stop or whatever, or like I said, sat in bed, that's the one, that's where I'm mainly playing it. I'm just sort of sat up in bed, do a couple of hours of it, put it away. Like, I don't want to drag myself over to a console or a PC and sit there slaving away. So do you play mouse and keyboard?
70 hours.
Oh, that's mad, isn't it? Like,
yeah, mouse and keyboard on the PC. I can't be happy playing it.
This is with it. So I'm so used to playing it on the Steam Deck now that I can only play it controller. Like, the mouse, just that feels really alien to me to play that game. It probably is like a great way of doing it. But yeah,
I've played most of it on the PC though, because I don't get to play the Steam Deck that often, because Zoe just like every fucking time, like,
you've lost it.
Every time, like, Zoe comes home from work, we'll go out and take the dogs for a walk, we'll come back. I'll go upstairs, get changed or whatever, come downstairs, she's already on the sofa, feet up, watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine or something on the TV, playing on the Steam Deck.
Nice.
She's currently hooked on what's the game that she's been playing? RimWorld.
Oh, I'm desperate. I'd want to get into that. I've got a copy of it.
I don't really know a huge amount about it, but she loves it.
Yeah.
I watched her playing what was that game she was playing with her sister the other day?
Lethal Company.
Content Warning.
Oh, Content Warning. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the thing where it's another one like Lethal Company. It's very like a four-player multiplayer thing where
you're filming spooky stuff.
Yeah, and it's just like horror comedy. yeah, it's very funny. Hopefully she's going to be playing some more tomorrow. Anything else?
The only other thing I've been playing, I picked up Cult of the Lamb.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah.
So I'd not played that when you guys were going off about it. So I thought, no, do you know what? It's nice and cheap. I'll pick it up, and I'm enjoying it. The Animal Crossing side of it, I'm finding it frustrating. But I think that's just because I'm early doors and I've not kind of got my head around it entirely. But I'm loving the dungeon part and the Zelda-y part of it. But yeah, the Animal Crossing-y part of it at the moment is doing my head in a little bit. But
oh really? I enjoyed that.
Yeah, but I've never been a big one for that kind of like Stardew, Animal Crossing. I've played them and they've never really got me. But this one, I understand this one more. like Cult of the Lamb more. It's just I need to be a bit, I think I basically screwed myself and like I've put things in the wrong places and expanded a bit too quickly and blah, blah, blah. So I think I've, you know, screwed myself a little bit, but persevering with it. And I mean, I am enjoying it and it's definitely at the moment it's on my list. So, yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. But,
good.
I might be coming to you for pointers on it at some point.
Nick might be better to go for that than me. It's been a while since I played it. It's a good game. It's a good game.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's it, mate. It's been a bit of a quiet one for me, but like I say, too much Balatro.
I know how you feel, man. I know how it is. I'm hopelessly addicted to it as well.
Yeah, man. The only other thing I did pick up actually was like that Need for Speed Unbound. Actually,
is that the one with all like the crazy like
graffiti coming out of the car?
Yeah.
So yeah, I picked that up for like it was like a fiver, but I haven't really got. Basically, I picked it up on Game Pass a while back, but it was on Game Pass. I shoved, you know what, for a fiver, I have it on a PlayStation. I can again Steam Deck it to bed. So that's what I do now. Sit there and play that. But I've only like got through the first couple of missions. So
yeah.
That's the only other game I'm
playing.
Those
games are all, you know, they're all fine.
Yeah.
They're all fine, you know. All right. What have I been playing then? Let me have a look. See if there's anything small before I talk about the bigger stuff I've been playing. It's been a while, hasn't it? Well, I've played lots of little bits and pieces. I've played a lot more Helldivers and stuff like that. I've been digging into, off the back of our chat on the last episode, I'm digging into a little bit of Vampyr.
Oh, nice.
Which is, yeah, it's still really good. Still really good. I've actually gone back to playing a bit of Destiny again.
Really? Oh, yeah, because there's the whole wrapping up thing.
Yeah, they've put in some stuff to do before the new final expansion comes out, and like the new stuff to do is essentially just like a horde mode, like a traditional like Gears of War horde mode, like the OG thing where you're putting down like defensive like tripwires and decoys and turrets and stuff like that. It's fairly rudimentary, but it's like just boiling Destiny down to, you know, what it does best, which is just shooting things in the face. And it still feels good, and it's still, you know, it's a good social game, so I like jumping on that to play with people when they're about. I suppose we better talk about Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yes.
I played a lot of Dragon's Dogma 2. By a lot, I mean 60 hours of Dragon's Dogma 2.
Mate.
Did you play Dragon's Dogma 1?
No, not at the time. I picked it up about a year ago, and it felt... You know when you play Dark Souls for the first time, and it was a bit kind of like, this feels really janky and weird and, you know, not like the other, like all the other games, and I didn't really get my head around it. And I couldn't really...
Yeah.
Like, I could see why it was... Everyone raves about it, but it didn't capture me, but yeah, that's about as far as I got with Dragon's Dogma. But I'm fascinated to like see if, you know, how they've pushed it forward and if it makes it more, you know, noob friendly, as it were.
So the first one was a bit of a cult game. It didn't sell hugely well, I don't think. But it had a very long tail. This was another one of those games I was talking about on the last episode where my friend Adam was sort of like my, I don't know. He was my video game guide, my video game Sherpa.
Yeah.
And like he would lead me to good games. There's another one I'm going to talk about in a bit as well that he led me to as well. And yeah, he got me into Dragon's Dogma. It's like a Japanese take on a Western fantasy RPG. open world sort of thing. Like a this is Japan's response to a sort of Skyrim sort of game. But it had a distinct like lack of polish.
Yeah.
And like some very obtuse gameplay mechanics, but it had some truly unique combat and like introducing like a hey, what if like when you're fighting a dragon in Skyrim, you could climb onto the dragon and fight it that way? And then what if instead of just using a regular bow and arrow in Skyrim, you could use a bow and arrow that fired magic arrows, and you can paint your targets like a fucking
like Rez,
like a Gundam game or like Rez, yeah. It had some really really cool stuff, like really cool cross like hybrid classes where like yeah like so the thing I was just mentioning about was the magic archer, which is where you combine a mage with an archer, or they could have the mystic knight where you combine a mage with a knight. Or like, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting game.
Like creative.
Had a long tail. They brought out some well-loved DLC. Because like when the game came out, it was lacking in a lot of areas. And the developer, the director would talk about how this is not the game, not the finished product that he wanted to put out. And then they brought out the Dark Arisen DLC, which was like, now this is the version that he wanted to put out. And then that got like remastered and brought out on next gen consoles. And by that, I mean PS4 and an Xbox One, because the last game came out so long ago. And that sold really well. And people have had a soft spot for it. And there was like a short-lived MMO. And there was or is a TV show, I think.
Really?
Didn't they make an animated show by the same people who did the...
The Castlevania people.
Castlevania stuff? Yeah, I've never seen it.
Look that up right now.
I'm sure there is. Please tell me I'm not making this up.
The dragons.
Please tell me I didn't dream it.
TV show. You wake up in a sweat. Dragons look like a TV show. No, you're absolutely right. Yep. One season.
All right.
Where to watch on Netflix.
That seems about right.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I don't have a Netflix subscription. But anyway, yeah. Dragon's Dogma 2 gets announced, and everyone's like, what the fuck? I never thought this would actually happen. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And the game creeps up, and people get some like preview stuff, and it's all sounding really, really positive. And then the game drops, and it has some problems. I haven't played it on console. I haven't really paid too much attention to what the situation is like on console. I hear it's not great, but on PC...
Is it another Cyberpunk?
Rough. So there are some, no, it's not like a Cyberpunk thing. There's not like loads of weird bugs. There's just like massive performance issues whenever you go into, like I've got a pretty beefy rig. I'm running a 3080, which I know is not like a 440 series card, but it's a decent, it's a decent graphics card. It's up there. It's still an upper range graphics card. And I could run that game at a locked 60, pretty much locked 60 most of the time. But whenever you go into a city, whenever there are lots of people, it absolutely just eats shit. Like the FPS falls off a cliff.
Wow.
Because there are some problems with the way that it is coded, where it's like this. It's not even to do with the... It's like I still know talking about graphics cards. It's not even really to do with graphics cards. It's to do with the CPU. And I've got a pretty beefy CPU as well. And it's because it has to compute the a lot of information about every single NPC in that area.
Oh, wow.
So when you step into a city, it gets real choppy and real messy. There are some other problems as well. People were complaining about the microtransaction stuff. There's a lot of stuff that you can buy. Now, I'm not going to make any excuses for Capcom because it's a dirty tactic and I don't like it at all. I don't like it when any developer does it. But the stuff they're selling in the shop is so stupid. It's stuff that is very, very easily obtainable in the game.
Yeah.
So it's literally just like you can pay to have more of that stuff if you can't be bothered to go and buy it in the game. I don't know. I don't know why it's in there, but it's just a bad look.
Yeah.
And it just creates negative buzz around this game to the point where if I look on the store page, I think it's still listed as... It was listed as mixed. For a while, it was mostly negative on Steam, right, which is not good. Like, Steam reviews are a big thing when it comes to selling a game on Steam.
Oh, yeah, for visibility and stuff. Yeah, massive.
Yeah, I mean, there are some other, like, problems about, like, the enemy density. This is a weird thing. I never thought I'd say this about a game. I usually, like, enjoy it. The enemy density is too high. And so when you're out exploring in the world, this game doesn't really have like accessible fast travel like a lot of fantasy games do. You have like a port crystal that you can drop in certain... You have a limited number of port crystals you can drop in certain places.
You can set your own like fast travel points.
Yes, but then to fast travel to that point, you need to be outside with an unobstructed like view of the sky, and you need to use a consumable to fast travel. Right. So there's a finite number of times you can fast travel, and that is a deliberate game design. Whether that's good or bad, I leave up to the individual player.
Yeah.
But it is a deliberate design choice to make you go out on foot and explore and travel places and go on an adventure, which is fine. That's great. You stumble across stuff all the time. but the enemy density means that every 30 seconds you're fighting a bunch of enemies.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, which is great for like XP grind farming and whatnot, but it just kind of slows everything down a lot more.
Like playing an old Final Fantasy where every three steps you bump into a random battle.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. You can just run past everything if you want, but it's like, I don't know.
just this massive Benny Hill train of things, like monsters chasing you.
There's also, again, this feels like we're going to have, you know, quotes coming out from the game director saying like, the version that was released was not like my ideal version of the game. And then like the DLC that comes out down the line will fix all the problems. There's like compared to like the Dark Arisen version of Dragon's Dogma 1, there is a lack of, there are less of the big monsters to fight. I mean less variety. There's dragons, there's griffins, there's hydras. One of the things that's like a lion with a snake head, tail, and a goat on its hair back. Not a hydra.
No, there were
hydras in 1. There's no hydras in 2, unfortunately. Which is a shame. But anyway, there's a good variety, but not the same that there was in Dragon's Dogma 1. So you end up fighting the same sorts of monsters more often than I would like.
Right.
But the things it does right, I just fucking love. Like the combat is in massive improvement on the first one, and the combat the first one was great. Added in some like really, really interesting new classes. There's one called the Warfarer, which is like you unlock it quite late on, and the Warfarer class means that you can pick like abilities from other classes and then have like the weapons of those classes and switch between them, so you can go from like being a knight to being a wizard to being a ranger like on the fly.
So rather than half swapping in the last one, it's more like you sort of multi-class.
Well, no, that's not even like a half and half, because those like hybrid classes were distinct classes on their own.
Right, okay.
So you have like the archer in this game again, and then you also have the magic archer, which is that halfway between that and a mage, and then you have the mage. But they're like, they're their own distinct classes with their own distinct skills and their own progression. And you can like switch between any number of them.
Interesting.
On the fly, and it's really, really cool to mess around with.
Yeah.
The pawn system, which is one of the things that was so unique about the first game, which is like you create this this character that will accompany you through the game, and other people create theirs, and then you borrow other people's pawns to fill out your party to make it up to 4, and then other people can borrow your pawn. And by borrow, I mean, your pawn doesn't like leave your party because someone else is using it. It just means that someone elsewhere is playing with a copy of your pawn. And then when they send it back, they'll come back with experience. Yeah. And like maybe some like a you know trinket that the other player has left given as like a gift for letting you use their pawn. But one of the cool things about that is that while they're off doing adventures with another player, they learn things about the world that maybe you don't know about. And so then when you're running around with them, they'll be like, oh, I learned, you know, about a chest near here from across the rift. Do you want me to show you where it is? And then you can like press up on the D-pad and they'll lead you to a chest that maybe you didn't know. Or if you're doing quests and they have done that quest in another world, they can point you in the right direction of where you need to go. And stuff like that is really cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
The coolest thing, something they dumped in and didn't tell anyone about it until people started to find out when it was too late. As you're playing through the game, like your pawns all like talk a lot. And they kept on talking about like this rumor that they've heard of this illness.
Yes, I've heard about this.
That they can pick up and then like, you know, oh, things will go bad and then we won't respond to our master's like beck and call or whatever. And he's just thinking, oh, he's just like chatting some nonsense. Or maybe it's like a story point's gonna come up. And it's like, no, there is a virus that pawns can pick up. When you borrow them from the world, or if you they can come back from another world with that virus, if it's your pawn, and they can infect the other pawns, and they'll slowly start to like. There's no clue. There's no status ailment in their status screen or anything like that. They'll just start becoming a little bit more brusque. And they might be a bit snappy with you, and they might not like follow your commands. And then, you know, if you don't pay attention to what's happening or you don't know what's happening, one night you'll go to sleep in an inn and something will possess your little cutscene where you see your pawn becoming possessed by something. And then you wake up in the morning and everybody's dead.
Oh.
They've just murdered the townspeople.
Everyone's dead. That's a
man. Yeah. And bringing people back from the dead requires an item.
Yeah.
For each one, which is, you know, finite and expensive.
Mm. I heard about this. So it's like people having to like go to the morgue and take a stone, like this particular stone, and then doing whatever they need to do. But then, like you say, running out of the stones and then having to choose between their favorite and their other favorite.
Yeah. I did find one on a particular side quest, one stone, which means that you can bring back all the people in an area in one go, but it's a one-time use and there's only one off this stone.
Wow.
So I've just been paying very close attention to my pawns, and if they get snappy, then they get thrown off the edge of the cliff.
They're getting quarantined.
No, you just no quarantining.
Quarantine with prejudice.
You have to kill them. you have to kill them to rid them of the the disease.
But yeah,
it's mad that they just threw this in out of nowhere.
Yeah, it sounds mad. But there's lots of like stuff like that. A lot of stuff I've been hearing about it, like the way it tracks quests and how deep it tracks quests, and like you say, I think I was listening to something where someone had to deliver a letter to a person, but that person, by the time you got there, had accidentally been killed by another party, but that wasn't scripted, that would just happened by accident, so they couldn't complete the quest to deliver.
So they have to go and find their body in the morgue and bring them back to life,
and then bring them back to life with a stone, but they've got to get the stone, and in getting the stone something else happened, and it just sort of like all spirals out of control. But it's just tracking all of those people, where they are, what they're, but it's very much like
and that's why when you're in the when you're in the busy environments, that's why like the frame rate is
just all bogging down. Yeah.
Because it's trying to do a lot of really interesting stuff and the text is just not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just not fully optimized, which is a shame.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah. There's some really, really cool stuff. Like, I love how it does not really hold your hand in quests. So, like, I've got like a side quest. A guy wants, he's an artist, and he wants to paint a griffin. The easiest way to paint a griffin is if the griffin's not moving. So he's like, maybe you should go and get a Medusa head.
Right, okay.
But, like, it doesn't tell you anything more than that. It's just like, go on, off you pop. Okay, fine. So, like, eventually I kind of found where there was a Medusa. But then there's a whole other thing of you have to, if you want to get a Medusa's head where it still has the power to turn things to stone, you have to kill it in a particular way. And right. then and chop, you have to chop its head off before it dies. And then you have to, there's a limited amount of time you have to be able to use the head before it withers.
Right, okay. So you've got to get it back quick, sharp.
Well, I haven't figured out how to get the Medusa's head off yet.
in battle, yeah.
No, I ended up, I forgot that my character was wearing like a mirrored shield when I fought the Medusa, and I ended up reflecting her gaze back at her and turning her to stone.
Right.
Which is very cool, but
not the intended.
Not what I wanted.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, it's just, it's fucking wild, but it's like, it's such a odd game. I remember playing through the first Dragon's Dogma. That was one of the first games where I started to, that broke me out of, like, you know, when you're younger, when you're a kid, like, you play games and it's like, and you like it. Regardless of the quality of it, you think because you like it, everyone else will like it. And so you'll just recommend a game to everyone else and be like, you should play this game. And I was like that for years with every game I played that I liked. It was like, you should play this game, regardless of whether that game would be right for that person or not. The first Dragon's Dogma was the first game where I was like, do you know what? This game is very much for me. I don't think you'll like it.
Yeah.
I can understand that. Unless, like, they had a very particular tastes.
They're willing to let some things slide.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the first one. The first big one for me where I was like, do you know what? I don't think I'm going to recommend this to other people. It's a very, very niche game. And Dragon's Dogma 2 is the same. It's sold a lot of copies. It's done very well. But it's not one that I can really recommend. It's not a game that I would say that doesn't respect your time. It's not that. It's just that the game requires a lot of you.
And so, if you're a big fan of, say, The Witcher 3, is this something you would recommend to someone who is into that kind of thing? Or would you say, no, it's a bit more
RPG? It's a bit less. Well, it's hard to say. There are less quests and there's more just out and about in the world exploring.
Right.
And more fighting monsters.
More busy work.
Yeah. But also fighting giant monsters, which is really fun. Like fighting just the regular creatures is busy work, but fighting the big monsters is really fun. And there's a lot of that. And there's less like of the doing quests, but the quests are like for a Japanese take on a Western RPG. Some of them are really well written, and they go in some interesting places. I haven't finished the game yet.
It seems like there's a lot of game there though. Like that's
there is. The only other one I've been playing, which is another one, it's like another solid 7 out of 10 third person action RPG game is I've been playing the remaster, and calling it a remaster is very, very generous, of Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning.
Wow. Okay.
I'm playing because it plays very, very well on the Steam Deck. It's like a perfect Steam Deck game.
Now, was Kingdoms of Amalur the one that was like it's part of the investment was done by a baseball guy?
Oh boy. Let me tell you a story.
Tell me the story because I remember bits of it.
So, I was going to talk about MLB The Show.
Well, we can tie that
as
into,
well.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck it. Yeah. While we're on this, before we get into the subject of this, I've been playing MLB The Show at 24 on Game Pass. It's a really, really good baseball game. I really like it. It's got some cool new stuff, expanding on stuff that was in the last season's one. Mm. Like a second season of the Negro Leagues story.
Okay.
But it also incorporates some cool stuff like I found out off the back of this that there are no, unlike most other sports, there are no rules that say that women cannot play in the men's teams. It's not it's not segregated by sex like that. It's just that no female baseball player has made it to the point of playing in the major leagues. But there was a woman player who played in the Negro Leagues, and her story is told in the Negro League stories.
Awesome.
I haven't played that bit yet, but it's just that's fucking cool. And in the mode where you like you create your own player and try and work your way up to major leagues, you can play as a female player.
Oh, brilliant. This time,
and make your way up to the major leagues, which is very cool. Surprisingly progressive for an American sports game. Which, I mean, as soon as I saw about that, I was like, I'm going to have to just do a cursory glance on Twitter, keywords, MLB The Show, and woke, just to see how angry people were online. And oh boy, were they upset about it. But it's predictable, repressing nonsense. Oh, but anyway, talking off baseball.
Right, yeah.
Kurt Schilling,
that's the name.
Kurt Schilling, who was a pitcher for the Red Sox and all-around piece of shit. Started a video game studio called 38 Studios, and he borrowed $75 million in government funds from Rhode Island's government.
That's it.
Because
I thought it was Canadian, but yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, I know, it was Rhode Island, and because he can manage to convince them all that he could help turn Rhode Island into like a tech center, like a new Silicon Valley. Mm. It was going to start with a video game studio, and they're like, sure thing, Mr. Baseball Man. Here's $75 million to start a studio. And they started a studio, and as you would expect by someone who has like absolutely no experience in this industry, things didn't go particularly well. They managed to ship a game. They managed to ship a game which sold quite well and people liked, Kingdoms of Amalur, and then immediately pumped all of that money that came in from the sales of that game, not into repaying the investment in the studio in the first place or paying
dropping
his staff
debt
or anything like that. It was like, do you know what? We can take on World of Warcraft. Let's make a Kingdoms of Amalur MMO. And I don't think it even made it into pre-alpha or anything like that. Things went to shit. The studio closed down in 2012. It fell apart so quickly that some employees who had moved down from Massachusetts and the studio was helping deal with their mortgage stuff were left saddled with their old mortgages. Paychecks went unpaid. A whole bunch of stuff went on.
The Canadian government obviously didn't get paid back, so there was a whole Rhode Island, that was it. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So they didn't get paid back, so therefore they then took control of the IP.
In 2016, the SEC got involved in it. I don't know what happened with the IP. I don't know who owns the. I mean, I can.
Because I thought it was something like Rhode Island literally owned the IP, and then any further sales from Steam go straight to Rhode Island. It's like a really weird situation. Or it was at one point.
A remastered version subtitled Re-Reckoning was released. Published by THQ Nordic.
That's it.
Who had acquired the Amalur intellectual property. So THQ Nordic owner. Yeah, I do know because the THQ Nordic logo pops up when you start the game.
Gotcha.
But Kurt Schilling since then, things have gone real, real well for him. He's a big Trump supporter. He got a job at ESPN to be a analyst there, and got fired from ESPN after saying a whole bunch of stuff like likening Muslims to Nazis, saying that journalists should be lynched, supporting the January 6th insurrection or whatever. Apparently he has a large collection of Nazi memorabilia in his house. I think the most recent thing that happened was, the Baseball Hall of Fame decided maybe we shouldn't let this guy in, and he had a big piss fight, like big fit about it, got real upset about it. And then there was I can't remember the guy's name. There was another pitcher, legendary pitcher at the Red Sox, notably because he was probably the last big like knuckleball pitcher. And a knuckleball is where you throw the ball in a way that it doesn't spin. It's kind of like some of the best penalty takers and free kick takers, what's his name? Ward-Prowse. Ward-Prowse hits a football in a way that means that it doesn't curve.
Ronaldo does it as well. Like it's, the ball's completely dead, but it still travels.
Yeah, and Janino used to do it as well. But it means that it moves in a very unique way. Knuckleball pitches nobody coaches it anymore, and nobody, so it's kind of like died out. But it's really, really interesting way of throwing a ball because it's like doesn't move particularly fast, but it's almost impossible to gauge where it's going to end up. So it's just like frustrating. Like batters were just swinging at thin air because the ball would like move at the last minute. But anyway, the guy died of brain cancer recently. A few months ago. Despite the fact that this guy and his wife had said, we don't want people knowing this, our private lives are private. Yeah. Kurt Schilling announced it on his podcast. And so they paid tribute at Fenway Park for the Red Sox's opening home game of the season this year, and they did not invite Kurt Schilling. The guy's a piece of shit, but he did for a brief time lead a studio that brought out a game that I quite like. It's very, very interesting. You can tell that he had like ambitions to make like a World of Warcraft kind of game because it's got a very cartoony art style, which is very reminiscent of World of Warcraft. The lore and everything. The lore and all the backstory and everything is written by a renowned fantasy writer called R.A. Salvatore. Yeah. It's an interesting one because like there is this deep lore and this deep story, and the whole thing about it is your character is unique because you're severed from like the ties of fate, which means that your future is not predestined, and you can forge your own path, which is very interesting in a RPG game, which has absolutely no choices at all and no way of like changing the outcome of what happens. It's very, very,
very corridor.
And like even down to like the design, it's like these like sort of like semi open areas connected by little like corridors basically. And like you can't, it's kind of restricted in its exploration, in an MMO, in a World of Warcraft kind of way. It's like there's a lot of similarities between it, despite it being a single player game. The difference between it is the fact that like the combat is just really, really good, really, really fun. You have like different classes, and you can mix and match them, and you have like a primary weapon and a secondary weapon, and like some abilities, and like you just. One button controls your primary weapon, one button controls your secondary weapon, and you're doing like combos of button presses between the two of them, and like you're spamming your abilities and whatnot. And it just feels really good, really solid. The story is pretty good, actually, despite the fact that like there is no way of like altering the path or anything. It's very, very prescribed. Kind of, I guess, as you would expect if the story was written by a fantasy author, is like, this is the story that is being told and there's no way of changing
it. Do not deviate from this.
Do not deviate from my path.
Yeah.
So there's not like alternate endings or anything like that, as far as I'm aware. I'm pretty sure there's not. The Re-Reckoning version comes out with some old DLC that they made a while ago, and this is crazy, some new DLC that only came out the other year after they put this remastered version out and then made some new DLC for it, which is kind of wild. I haven't played any of that stuff yet. Remaster is very, very, it runs at a higher resolution than it did originally, but they didn't make it look any prettier at all. It's it's this very funny game in that, like, when it came out in 2012. And already at that time, it was like doing some really interesting things, but also felt like a throwback game then. Wow. Especially compared to stuff that was coming out around it. Like Skyrim had come out the year before. Dark Souls had come out the year before. The Witcher 2 came out same year. The first Dragon's Dogma came out the same year.
Blimey.
And this game felt like a bit like of a throwback. So like a... this is kind of weird. In it's not a million miles away from like Fable. In the way that like it's in the way that
you've got to like that style to pick it up, right?
Yeah,
it's one of those. Yeah, like, he obviously liked a certain type of game.
Yes,
and it was getting away from him, so he made his own in that mold, right?
I don't want to dig that far into Kurt Schilling's taste because the man seems like a fucking asshole.
Yeah,
because you dig far enough and you only need to scrape the surface and you'll find Nazi memorabilia. But
games were amazing in 2008, damn it, and I want to keep playing games.
Yeah,
there's
like
2008.
In 2012, there's already aspects of it that felt like this is kind of like a throwback to like PS2 sort of era. Third person action games, like there's so many games when you're playing, it's like this bits of this feel like Soul Reaver, bits of this feel like Fable and so on and so forth, but like but it's tight and it plays really well and it's fun and there's some really interesting environments and some fun monsters to fight and some really cool mechanics. So like it does some really interesting things while also feeling like a throwback. And like you fast forward you know, more than a decade since it originally came out. And it's like the stuff that it's doing that's cool is like still feels cool, but it feels even more like a throwback. And if I was playing this on the big screen on my PC, I think I'd probably think like this looks kind of ropey. But playing it on the Steam Deck, because it's a very colorful game, very stylized.
Also, you're playing it on like that OLED screen with the bright colors and the deep blacks.
Yeah, it looks lovely. It looks lovely on the Steam Deck. It's a very good Steam Deck game.
Awesome.
So I'm enjoying that. I'm playing that basically every Friday night. Zoe takes over the computer, so she can play Content Warning or Lethal Company or something like that with her sisters, and you know I sit on the bed covered in dogs and play just dogs climbing all over me and play some Kingdoms of Amalur, and I'm really
That's
digging
awesome.
It
oh yeah. Excellent. No, I like that.
Yeah, it's a decent game.
Yeah No, it's definitely one that I like, always heard about and never picked up again. Like we did with that, we were talking about Dragon's Dogma. Like I've always heard about Dragon's Dogma. Always had people going, yeah, you should play it, and never picked it up until like say a year ago. So
it's another one that I really couldn't recommend to people. I mean, I'd more likely to recommend Kings of Amalur weirdly than I would Dragon's Dogma 2, because like you can play it in shorter stints. It's there's less like it doesn't require as much of a commitment.
It's more, I was going to say, more of a podcast game than something you have to fully engage with.
Yeah, but to be honest, if I was going to recommend any game to play that's like you can just like play a little bit here, a little bit there, doesn't require too much concentration, it's going to be Balatro. That's going to be the game that I recommend probably for the rest of the year. Like, I've rewatched so many like just junk 90s action movies in the last few weeks.
Really?
On a second screen whilst playing Balatro. Like, I've watched like all of the Die Hard movies, awesome. Air Force One, Crimson Tide, Volcano. just a lot of.
You have to watch like Iron Eagle now. Like, go really into the kind of like. Into the, I mean, the like, real depths of. Like action films from the 80s.
It's like it's just the stuff that's available on Disney Plus, and like it's already. I've watched enough of these films that it's like, oh man, we know what you like. What is it recommending for me now? Let's have a look. Recommended for you. Oh shit, I watched The 13th Warrior, so now it's recommending a bunch of historical action films, Kingdom of Heaven and King Arthur.
Yeah.
And oh man, it's recommending The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the film that was so bad it made Sean Connery retire.
Yeah, exactly.
What else have we got in here?
From acting.
Chain Reaction with Morgan Freeman and
Keanu Reeves film. Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Two
researchers are on the run after being framed for murder and treason.
Yeah. I think Chain Reaction is like, isn't that the one where they harness the power of water and it's going to be an everlasting power source? And then they're chased around for basically like the...
What does it say on Rotten Tomatoes? 18% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is promising. This is promising. At a Chicago University research team that includes brilliant Eddie Kasalevich, Keanu Reeves, experiences a breakthrough, a stable form of fusion that may lead to a waste-free energy source.
There you go.
However, Dr. Paul Shannon, played by Morgan Freeman, has ties to a private company that wants to exploit the technology. So blah, 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 the frames of murder and the fusion.
Yeah.
Man, I'm going to watch the fuck out of that.
You've got to watch also, it, man. It's hilarious. Yeah.
From I'm looking at like the films that you may enjoy if you've watched this, and it's like Die Hard, Gone in 60 Seconds, The Transporter, and all of the Taken movies. So it's in good company.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, but I've been just consuming so much trash whilst playing Balatro, and like,
brilliant. Oh,
man, it's just like, is that music burned in your head yet?
Oh god, yeah. I have to turn it off, because at one stage I was like sat there and my wife was just like, turn the music off.
Yep.
I was like, okay, yeah, sorry.
Forgot. Have you turned the speed up to up at all of like the cards?
No, I haven't. I should do that, to be
you
fair.
Should do that, yeah.
Yeah.
I turned it up to 2. And then I turned it up to 4, I think. Was like the last thing of the year. Yeah.
Oh, it's such a shame we don't do on like Game of the Year is like best vibe of a game, because that video, the way that it feels like a LA video poker screen, Las Vegas like video poker screen, it's perfect, it's absolutely perfect, incredible game,
It's really good.
I'm gonna go play some of it in a minute.
Balatro, go and buy it, it's cheap.
Especially
love
if you like CD keys.
Yes, and we love a small independent game.
Tell you what, I did buy today, was on sale. Citizen Sleeper, 69p.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man,
it's a fucking bargain. I got a bunch of stuff in the last Steam sale for like less than £1, because I sold all of my Steam trading cards. And I got a bunch of stuff. I haven't got around to playing some of it yet. Where did I buy? I bought Florence.
Okay.
I bought Shower with Your Dad Simulated 2015.
Classic.
And I bought Pony Island.
Now, I listened to a podcast that was like where we do game clubs. It's a game or one like that. Watch Out for Fireballs, but they did a Pony Island breakdown, basically. Like,
it's one of those games that's like a game that's incredible. not how it appears.
Nah, yeah.
At first glance.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it's the
like
same
it.
People who went on to make Inscription.
Yes.
Which is another game that I want to play at some point.
The general consensus was it's not as good as Inscription but he learned a lot of lessons from Pony Island to make Inscription better.
So, I got all 3 of those games for less than £2.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. It's the way to do it, man.
Yeah.
You go to the games for £4 section of the Steam style bits and
that's it.
Filter by price. Like, look for what's the cheapest, that's like well reviewed, and it's like,
anything
Florence.
I've heard
we need to play Florence for ages and
awesome. Is that us?
Yes, I think that's about it. Yeah, we've got nothing else to say. We managed to get an hour and a half out of just us waffling.
Waffle.
So. Yeah. gonna go and play some more Balatro.
Yes, mate.
Jazzy, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always, chatting to you.
And to you, mate.
And thanks very much, dear listener. Catch you on the next episode, and fuck the Yankees.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.